at you, looking at me. Day two with no electricity. Shout out to the Philadelphia Electric Company for crapping the bed once again. Good old Pico. Whenever there's a storm, Pico's nowhere to be found. Whenever your bill's late, Pico's right there to shut your meter off. Great guys. I knew right from the beginning, Pico's always winning. No electricity here. Thomas Paine Podcast, the Big Wednesday Podcast. We're doing it by gasoline. Fumes. The sucker's about to cut out. I'm recording under duress. We have a pandemic. We have a tropical storm that blew through tornadoes right around our house through the Philadelphia area. Floods, chaos. Send in the locusts. Can we get the locusts, please? I'm trying to get out the Big Wednesday Podcast. We got a great interview. Somebody just keeps dropping one obstacle after another in front of me. My house looks like it's got so many wires, looks like an octopus setting up a beach chair. But we persevere. So we're running on a generator. I don't know. I have to go get more gas for it. I hope. I might have to do this at 5-minute increments and then edit it together because I'm afraid we might lose. Been working for like 5 hours to try to do something that takes 45 minutes. You ever run into this in your life? Round and round, as Rat says. And we go. And we've come back around to a Wednesday, the Big Wednesday Podcast. We had Payne in the morning today, earlier. It's being received well. Got a great interview for you today. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. First, shout out to the folks on patreon.com/truepundit, subscribestar.com/truepundit, who support us directly, who get the video podcasts of Payne in the Morning, the Maura Payne Show. We're just coming off that last night. It's a good show. It's another two and a half hours. Then we did another hour on Payne in the Morning. So we have our telethon Tuesday into Wednesday here, and it's made more difficult by Mother Nature and the very fact that nobody really seems to give a shit anymore out there. There's a lot of people without power, and there doesn't seem to be any full court press about getting it done. You know what I mean? So what we've had to do is, evil ways. Yeah, well, I've already changed my evil ways. That's why I'm doing the podcast and trying to tell the truth. So we've had to go mobile here. And it's really unfortunate because I wanted to get this interview out earlier today, but on Wednesday. But we do the best we can with what we have to work with. And we don't have much to work with, as you know. And that's why we support and we are very gracious to the folks who do support us on those platforms, patreon.com/truepundit, subscribestar.com/truepundit. If you find some value in what we're doing, the interviews we're doing, the analysis, the news, the humor, the sarcasm, the anger, it goes on and on and on. Feel free to kick in a couple bucks. Keep the lights on, even when there are no lights. I have a small staff of people in the driveway on treadmills and stationary bikes trying to generate some cheap electricity. As we go just by generator, we'll do the best we can. We did the morning show by generator too. And we proceed. This probably means that you won't get a big 25-minute rant from me about setting up the guest I have. And he really needs no introduction. Once he starts rolling, your head's going to spin. That's what I like to do, bring stuff to you that you're not seeing in the mainstream media, you'll never see in the mainstream media before we get started. And it's a similar parallel issue. My guest today is Stephen Hoffenberg, who saved the New York Post at one point. His ties to the New York Post are legendary, and as well as his ties to Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell are legendary. He was former business partner and associate for Jeffrey Epstein for almost a decade, and Maxwell, and an insider, and he knows where, I would say, all the bodies are buried, but it might actually be literally before this is over. I mean, this guy knows it. You know, we'll get into that in a minute. Going back to my New York Metro journalism market days, the passing of Pete Hamill today, former legendary reporter, columnist in New York, wish his family condolences, a rest in peace. A guy who I looked up to, along with Mr. Breslin, Jimmy Breslin, in New York City when I was just coming into journalism at that time, early 90s, daily journalism in the New York City market. I had already been in the weekly, but newspaper, but then in daily up in North Jersey. And a couple times I had headed down to the old Lion's Head Tavern, a few steps down from Christopher Street in Greenwich Village. My DEA buddies know the area well. And, God, the legends that used to drink in the Lion's Head. The roster of the Lion's Head. You got Breslin. You got Pete Hamill. Rest in peace. And rest in peace to Breslin as well. Well, he's in the same category that I just described to Breslin as far as I'm concerned. Norman Mailer. Frank McCourt. You'd see Frank McCourt in there every now and then. Legendary. David Markson, Wilfred Sheed. I mean, it's all these guys. Vic Ziegel, he was a big newspaper man in the city. And they're all gone. They've all moved on. They've crossed over, so to speak. But what a place that was for a young guy. And going there, I mean, like a young regular in there was like 55, 60. I was in my mid-20s just going in there to, had a couple interviews in there and some meetings in there. I used to meet people in there to talk. I interviewed one guy from the Masters of Deception. I won't tell you which hacker it was, but look them up. They were the first hacking group busted by the FBI. I broke bread with their leader in the Lion's Head. Hamill was in there that day, but I was like, "How are you, Mr. Hamill? I'm a big fan." Yeah, okay, kid, get out of here. It's like, you know, these guys were like legends. You didn't want to walk up to them saying, "Hey, I really liked your column last week. It's really good." It's like, beat it, pal. A lively place, and a special time in history and a special time in my life. And so I just wanted to mention that with Pete Hamill. And it's weird that we have today as a guest a guy with such strong ties to New York City and the New York Post. You can Google it later if you so choose, that he did save the New York Post from bankruptcy and came in and bought it. And now his journey has been incredible since then. A menagerie of twists and turns, just like my life has been. And we will move on to the interview here momentarily, but let's do a couple intros on Mr. Hoffenberg, who I plan to have future conversations with because he is a wealth of knowledge. And in this interview on the Thomas Paine podcast, if you're ever out there wondering, where did Epstein get all of his money? The press refers to him as a financier, but they're not very clear on exactly what house he was working for or what he was moving or what his expertise was in finance. If you hear clicking here and buzzing, it's because we're on a generator and we could cut out at any minute, which might be a good thing according to a lot of people. Just kidding. There you go. It's always important to bang your head off the mic in the dark. Flying without a net. I got no computer monitors. I got nothing. Me in the dark with a microphone and a mixing board. I have no notes to go through off of. Not that I use notes a lot, but I sometimes on the big Wednesday, I make notes of the interviews. I don't have any notes, so we're just going to roll this out to you in a few moments so that you get the capture. But there are a couple things I want to set up. Number one, how did Epstein make his money? Mr. Hoffenberg, as I said, a longtime associate and insider of the Epstein machine, tells us he made his money from extortion, blackmail, money laundering, and money laundering for terrorists. Is that even public? I don't know if that's public yet, but I'm sure in some facet it is, although we will be breaking news here on Ghislaine Maxwell, and I won't spoil it for you by setting it up. I won't give you an easy out. You have to listen. And there's some shocking things that we discuss, as usual. I usually get folks to say things that they may not normally say other places or not in the same exact way or with more detail. And I was fortunate enough that Mr. Hoffenberg was very accommodating in that area. More importantly, you find out that Epstein and Maxwell, de facto, were able to break any and all laws they wanted to, basically because they were licensed by the United States government to do so. They had a perpetual, in perpetuity, get out of jail free card. And it's a real head scratcher for most people. For me, it's not a head scratcher whatsoever because I've been preaching and teaching on here about a protection racket that spans far and wide, stemming from the United States all over the world globally. The rich and famous and the elite who traffic illicit goods, traffic human beings, launder money, blackmail, leverage, politicians, Hollywood, rich and famous, it runs the gamut. Wealthy people, puppet masters we would call, of the Soros level, behind the curtains, pulling the strings, who have soldiers and loyal sentinels like Epstein, like Maxwell, and we'll get into that. But we finally get some insights on how Jeffrey Epstein made his money, how much money he did make, and for who and what happened to him. That includes the Towers Financial scandal and one of the biggest Ponzi schemes in the history of the United States. I think it's only second to Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. The FBI came in and shut down. But strangely enough, Mr. Epstein was never indicted for that. Guess who was, though? Mr. Hoffenberg was. Mr. Hoffenberg's co-conspirator, Jeffrey Epstein, in the case, mysteriously vanished from the indictment. Guess what Mr. Hoffenberg did? A 20-year sentence in federal prison, served 18 years thinking about this guy, Epstein, who sold him out. And the government helped sell him out so the government could protect Epstein and let him keep doing what he was doing, acting as a super spy, a pedophile, a human trafficker, an arms trafficker, involved in subterfuge, intel, blackmail, leverage, and all types of illicit schemes, according to Hoffenberg and records and testimony from other people, dovetails. We also look into the strange situation and battle between Attorney General William Barr and former head of the Southern District of New York for the Justice Department, Mr. Berman. The battle before the indictment was unsealed against Ghislaine Maxwell, if you want to call it an indictment. It's a very interesting. Mr. Hoffenberg's intelligence, which you can understand, he has some serious hooks when it comes to this stuff, dovetails with information that Drew Pundit and myself have reported regarding Berman, regarding Ghislaine Maxwell, regarding Barr. You'll hear that as well. A very telling interview, and one you don't want to miss. So sit down and look out for. I'm all revved up because it's like you're under the gun. You're waiting for the power to go out at any minute, and you lose 15, 20 minutes of of content, and then you have to go back and redo it. And this played out overnight. So I just need to slow down and relax a little bit. But keep in mind, as we talk about some of the names that are dropped, I'll do a quick intro here so it flows a little bit easier when Mr. Hoffenberg starts talking about these people. Adnan Khashoggi, of course, everybody remembers the Washington Post quote-unquote journalist, who they mourned and said, oh my God, it's been a tragedy. You find out that Epstein was actually on the payroll of Khashoggi in the Middle East. And how and what the Khashoggi family is known for. They talk about also British intelligence asset, Sir Douglas Leese, who was a mentor to Epstein. And what he was mentoring him in, all illicit activity, and the money laundering. I put this together as a money laundering op that still continues today. I agree with Mr. Hoffenberg, and we talk about that today. I don't want to get in front of the breaking news, so I'll just let it do that. Things to think about if you're taking and making a cheat sheet and you want to further research things. Towers Financial, something worth Googling. Sir Douglas Leese, L-E-E-S-E, worth Googling. Adnan Khashoggi, of course. Relationship to Epstein, money laundering, influence internationally. And keep in mind, again, he's all allowed to do this with a license from the United States government for years. A license from the DOJ. The FBI's investigated this guy upside down and sideways. Oh, and Hoffenberg talks about how many female victims or young victims the FBI has interviewed in connection to Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. It's staggering. Staggering. A very telling interview, and I have undersold it under the wire, apparently, before the power kicks out. And keep in mind, if you're somewhere with power, don't be afraid to kick us a couple of dollars. Maybe we can buy a new generator. I got one out there with a hand crank and a treadmill. comes with a habit trail. But we appreciate the support big time, and we'll see you on the back end. Let's get this thing rolling. So the first thing we'll get into is your relationship with, I guess we'll start somewhat at the beginning so you can give people an idea of your relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. You were in business for a long time. Was it 9 years or was it a shorter period than that?
No, I worked alongside of Jeffrey Epstein and was involved with Jeffrey Epstein one-to-one for 9 years. From 87, when they put Jeffrey Epstein into Towers Financial, Sir Douglas Leese and Adnan Khashoggi put Jeffrey Epstein into Towers Financial, I was a co-worker of Jeffrey Epstein. Many called me a co-conspirator in the financial crimes that Jeffrey Epstein was named in alongside of me, and then his name was removed, which was his ability among his influential friends to accomplish in getting cases changed to his advantage. So from 87 to 96, I had a one-to-one back-and-forth dialogue with Jeffrey Epstein. From 87 to 94, I worked alongside of Jeffrey Epstein around the world at Tally's Financial, and that's how it all started. He came into Tally's Financial at the request of Sir Douglas Rees, an on-time tractor and very affluent, high-level business person based in the UK, who was associated alongside of Adnan Khashoggi, who was in the same business with Douglas Rees on the arms dealing, some of the money laundering, and also in a bunch of corporate capacities as well. Sir Douglas Rees closed the largest arms deal in the Middle East with the help of Adnan Khashoggi in the 80s that was raised in questions in the UK Parliament. It was some $40 billion of arms transactions that moved into Iraq and Iran in the Middle East by Sir Douglas Rees. And that's been reported, but hasn't been linked to Jeffrey Epstein, who was an employee of those two very prominent men, Adnan Khashoggi and Sir Douglas Rees. From the time he left Bear Stearns in 81, and to they placed him into Towers Financial, 87 is when he started at Towers Financial in New York City. So go ahead.
Well, I just I've read in the last 2 years, and every time I read it, it makes me laugh because I have some background in intel, as we've discussed off the air, that the Washington Post is very upset about the loss of Khashoggi. He was a top flight journalist, and I just have to shake my head. Yeah, he was a journalist, all right. They painted this guy as a crazed journalist, freedom fighter, and I'm saying they must know about this guy's background. They cannot know about this guy's background, what he did on the international scene for intel and intrigue and terrorism and terror. It's insane. I just wanted to throw that out there because whenever people mention Khashoggi, they're usually bellyaching about how he was a top journalist who was struck down in the prime of his life, and he had so much, one of those things, and it's kind of shake my head at it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that's the nephew of Adnan Khashoggi, and his whole family was in the political area for decades, making a fortune. And his uncle, Adnan Khashoggi, was one of the top arms dealers in the world. So, of course, there was argument and claims saying that he did journalism, but journalism was not the family's only occupation. So I'm not trying to paint this dead man who evidently was murdered, according to the claims. So I'm not trying to paint his soul. But his family is very famous. There is a direct linkage between the employment of Jeffrey Epstein when he left Bear Stearns or was fired from Bear Stearns into 1987 with Khashoggi's family. So you're right for being amused because the reporting is untold as to what really happened. But this Epstein case may change that circumstance. So that's just a little comment that it's not completely told with the murder of Khashoggi.
Let's talk about specifically another chuckle I get from the news is when I read that even you know, up until last year that Epstein was a financier. I mean, I think he was a financier moving money around, laundering money. You're saying for arms for this group in the Middle East, very, I wouldn't call them a affluent group. I mean, these are the kind of guys you don't really mess with based on some of the folks I've talked with. What was he doing? How much money was he moving? That kind of stuff. What kind of details do you have on that? What he was laundering? What was his take? What was his skim? Do you have any information on that?
Well, Epstein was employed. After he got fired from Bear Stearns, he became employed as an investment banker, consultant, expert for the Sir Douglas Leith money laundering operation, an arms placement operation, and banking operation and insurance business. And he was employed there from, I believe, 81, 82, to when he joined Towers Financial. They put him into Towers Financial with me because they wanted him out of their hair. They wanted him out of that big business that they had running offshore. So the answer was they moved money, hot money, for all kinds of political figures, more so in the offshore category in North America. And the moving of the money was to move it from a risky place into a safe haven banking system or country investment offshore. And they were paid a fee for that. The company that Epstein worked for was paid a fee for moving the hot money around the world. And those fees were in the range of 1% to 10%, usually, in what they did. And Epstein didn't get all of the fee. He was in management of this company, and it was led by these notorious players in the offshore market, Anand Khashoggi, Sir Douglas Leith, and Epstein played a role in it because he had a great skill set of being able to do the art of the deal. He was a tremendous negotiator, tremendous. So he played a big, important role until they wanted to throw him out of that group as well. He got thrown out of Bear Stearns, and he got thrown out of the money laundering arms sales group as well. And there are reasons that we'll get into. I just wanted to answer anything else you might have about the money laundering and arms sales. There's a $37 billion transaction that closed in armament up to Iran and Iraq that documented, published, if you know how to connect the dots, that Epstein worked in and part of in that time frame of 81, 82, 87. So there's a lot to learn, and I'll cover more about what Epstein did. He got thrown out of the arms sales money laundering group for blackmail, for taking money he didn't deserve and for trying to take more money. So let's go forward.
Well, you're talking about the clientele of these folks when he was laundering money. The clientele would be, would it include U.S. lawmakers, rich and famous in the U.S.? Does that encompass those folks, or is it more international scope?
I don't want to make claims against U.S. lawmakers and get ahead of the FBI, their investigation of Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein and Sir Douglas Leith. I don't want to get ahead of that now. That would not be wise. But offshore was a regular business for the employers of Jeffrey Epstein, heads of governments offshore, political figures offshore, heads of mega companies offshore that had to move hot money. And Jeffrey Epstein was employed by that group of people, very famous people that did that. And those are the people that wanted to dump Jeffrey Epstein in 1987 and put him into Towers Financial. Those people were involved in Towers Financial, a public company. And I'll explain that to you if you're ready to go to that issue.
Well, I think I understand why they dumped him, and we'll touch on that in a moment. I'm just more interested in what you just said. Then he turns around, if I am him, and I understand the money game and the leverage game and the blackmail and how it's a revolving door, how you can sell the same piece of dirt to different bidders behind everybody's back and double, triple dip, quadruple dip. Does he take some of this information he's dealing with clients and he sells it to U.S. Intel, or he brokers deals with U.S. Intel to ingratiate himself or maybe profit?
There has been talk about that I don't want to get ahead of in today's discussion, because the USA Intel and Jeffrey Epstein, that's a topic that needs to be reviewed by the FBI. And I don't want to get ahead of the FBI.
Fair enough. You already answered the question by not answering it. I just thought I'd throw it out there. Because I understand what happens behind the scenes. And are you cooperating at all, or? I know you have a murky history with the Justice Department, as many of us do. Have they asked you for your input on any of these matters with the Maxwell case or the Epstein case, since they were both indicted?
The questions about what I'm doing with the American law enforcement people or the American intelligence people, I can't take those questions in any way, shape, or form. And I can't deal with that, because it's not the appropriate answer for anybody to give. And I certainly can't give it. So I respect the law enforcement people. I'm very aware of what's taking place with Celine Maxwell and with the Epstein's entire story and the money that is being laundered right now today, ongoing. There's a fortune being laundered today in the continuing Jeffrey Epstein co-defendant's crimes. Right now, this second, as we're talking, the money's being laundered an awful lot. So I'm aware.
Let's talk about that. Who's laundering it? What's the network? And what does it benefit? It always has to benefit something besides lining someone's pocket. It's either lining someone's pockets, or is it for a political/religious bent, funding some type of an operation? Can you go more into that?
Yes. There's a giant criminal enrichment, money laundering occurring today. Funds that the victims should be receiving, and the United States of America, the government should seize, which I'm confident they will. There is right now, as you know, Jeffrey Epstein supposedly was involved in two suicides in the federal prison. Second suicide, August 10th. An earlier suicide 10-15 days before that. 2 days before the death of Jeffrey Epstein, August 10th, 2019, in probably the most high security New York City prison, Jeffrey Epstein died But 2 days before he died, he signed paperwork to launder money, billions of dollars, with a man that was employed by him for over 20 years that I know well, and he knows me well, Darren Indyke, who made himself, 2 days before Jeffrey Epstein's death, a key money launderer for a fortune of money in the Jeffrey Epstein's fabricated trust estate, which was done in a prison 2 days before Epstein's death, which is a fake estate, completely fake. And it could be taken apart easily. So that's transparent money laundering taking place today, where the enrichment is coming to Jeffrey Epstein's co-defendants who are running the estate and taking money out of the estate and not reporting correctly to the courts that are suing them, which are the Virgin Island courts. And I'm sure the Southern District of New York and the FBI are looking into this deeply, because there was an announcement a while back by the Southern District of New York that this money laundering leader, Darren Indyke, was a target or a person of interest. And that was put on the record. So this money laundering is ongoing today. It's the victim's money. It's the United States of America money, United States of America money, and it needs to be seized. If this were any other case, the seizure would be underway right now. I mean, I'd like President Trump to talk about the seizure of this vast amount of money, not to go to the media and talk about his socializing with Ghislaine Maxwell today. What about this vast amount of money that's being laundered today? How come it's not in the discussion stages with President Donald Trump? America needs money desperately. There could be a seizure of over $1 billion by the Southern District of New York if they understood all of the evidence in order to get that accomplished. It could be above $1 billion seizure by the United States of America of the money laundering taking place by Jeffrey Epstein's people right now.
Well, would you put Maxwell in the mix as a co-conspirator to continue to launder the money since his arrest and or his death? Would she be considered a co-conspirator, or is it outside of Maxwell's reach?
No. Ghislaine Maxwell signed documents dealing with the money laundering. The monies reported in her bail argument, wherein she was said to have $20 million in accounts, that's in the money laundering scam. And she was a direct participant and signed documents with the head of the money laundering scam that's been in the media, Darren Indyke. She signed documents with him. Now, this is breaking news, so I'm getting a little bit ahead of what's out there, because this is not out there, how that works. It just so happens that I know how that worked, and I know what she did. And she's part of the billion-dollar money laundering scheme taking place today that the Southern District of New York, the United States, will see. I'm not saying anything negative about the United States seizing this money, because I firmly believe that the Southern District of New York, Mr. Strauss, the acting U.S. attorney, wants to seize this vast amount of money that's being money laundered today. So let's move on.
Well, I've been surprised, Stephen, that there wasn't already civil forfeiture move, is, you know, that came weeks after the initial indictment of him. I actually said to a number of people, I think I said it on an interview. I was doing a show. We do a show every Tuesday night called The More Pain Show. I said, where is the, when are they going to go after his money? It's ripe. It's sitting there. Or they're not going to go after his money? It seemed very strange.
Well, I think the fired U.S. Attorney Berman would have done the money seizure of this $1 billion. Or, you know, they're reporting now that they have in bank accounts $634 million cash. This is ridiculous. This is money laundering. Versus, so the civil, the criminal forfeiture you're talking about, I'm sure the fired U.S. attorney, Mr. Berman, would have gotten to that. There's no question about it. Because he was on that trail. He was definitely on that trail. And when you met with the FBI, Michael, you said they were interested. That they were definitely
interested. They were definitely interested. And here's the let me ask you, since we're on Berman, and we're kind of jumping around, but that's the way it is when you're on a story this big, you have the luxury of jumping around. There's so many little juicy tidbits. Our information on Berman was he was pressing hard, and you don't have to go into details about what you may know or what might compromise what you know. Just, you can just talk in generalities if you want, or you feel free to go an extra mile. But our information on Berman is that he was pressing. He wanted to indict Maxwell, and he was also pressing on Epstein, and he was getting a lot of pushback from Barr and DOJ and DC, who didn't necessarily want to, it's really incredible, didn't necessarily want Berman to even indict Maxwell. And your thoughts on Berman? We heard he was pressing to indict Maxwell harder and sooner, and it's similar with her co-conspirator a year earlier, who ended up dead in federal holding, and he was getting a lot of pushback from DC and from the upper echelons of justice. Is that accurate, based on what you know?
That's an excellent question that the public would love to know the answer to. Now, the answer rests in several facts that are fascinating to look at. The U.S. Attorney General, Mr. Barr, when firing the U.S. Attorney, Southern District of New York, Mr. Berman, offered Mr. Berman the chairmanship of the Securities Exchange Commission to step down, which Mr. Berman did not accept. And he further offered Mr. Berman the chief spot supposedly claimed at the United States Department of Justice Civil Division to step down. Now, this has been claimed in the media reported. Further to that, Mr. Berman said that he found out that he was fired by reading a press release issued by the U.S. Attorney General, Mr. Barr, saying he was fired, and Mr. Berman took the other side of the defense position, saying, you can't fire me. President Trump has to fire me because I was appointed by judges. A settlement occurred of that, wherein they agreed at the United States Department of Justice to allow Mr. Berman's assistant, Ms. Audrey Strauss, to continue at his office in his work product. And within days later, Mrs. Strauss or Ms. Strauss had Jelaine Maxwell arrested. So there was a big issue here, and there was an outcome of this issue with the arrest of Jelaine Maxwell. To make a claim inside of that firing of Mr. Berman, the public would love to learn about that. They really would. So you need a whistleblower, a direct whistleblower. Question is, who's going to be that whistleblower to provide that information? It's very serious information. Very important.
Well, beyond the exact reasons why they were fighting or there was infighting, to your knowledge, are the representations accurate that Berman was pressing to go harder and to indict Maxwell sooner, as well as Epstein? Is that at least accurate based on what you know?
From what I've researched, the answer is yes. That there was going to be an arrest of more people and the seizure of the billions of dollars by the Southern District of New York of the money laundering taking place. Now, that should be done. They should get that cooperation and they should seize the billions of dollars for the victims and for the benefit of America. And you said, why wasn't it done when Epstein was arrested and when he
right.
died in August 2019?
Right.
It should be done. It should be done. And I'm highly confident that billions of dollars that are being money laundered this minute by Epstein's partners or associates or co-conspirators, Darren Indyke leading the group, that's got to stop. And that's being charged and claimed outside of America's direct shores in St. Thomas. The U.S. Virgin Islands are part of America, but it's being litigated over there, which is ridiculous. This should be handled in the Southern District of New York, and the seizure should be done in the Southern District of New York of the huge amount of money right now, right this minute. And I'm sure they're looking at it. They have to be looking at it.
Well, you're.
I'm sure.
You know
Joe
that.
Joe Biden.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Joe Biden is going to mention this. Why aren't they seizing these billions of dollars? I'm sure that's going to become a campaign question. And it should be. Why isn't America seizing this money laundered billions of dollars? Why? America can. The victims want them to. I want them to. You want them to. Everybody that I've spoken to in the media can't understand why America won't seize the billions of dollars. So I believe that the Southern District of New York and the FBI will do a great job and will seize this money laundered over $1 billion. Next.
Well, you know, Stephen, if they want your money, they'll get it. They don't need to file some lawsuit or investigate down in St. Thomas. If the Southern District or justice in D.C. was serious enough, it would be happening right out of the Southern District, and it would happen pretty damn fast and pretty damn hard.
Well, the media understands that now there is a substantial question of money laundering with the Jeffrey Epstein money for this over $1 billion. The estate, Darren Indyke, is saying the cash on hand in banks is $634 million, but that's not certified by any major auditing company. There's no substantiating evidence. And this money laundering crime is underway this second. So the media is not sleeping on this, and you're not sleeping on this, Michael. You know this is ripe for seizure this second. You don't have any doubt.
Well, I mean, here's the rub, though, right, Stephen? You're a financial guy, and the longer you take to seize it, the more of an opportunity that it dissipates or it's relaundered and vanishes. That's what I'm thinking. If I was on the other side and I was handling the money, I would start spreading it around all over the place, and just that $634 million, I'd make as much of it disappear and reappear somewhere else as I could, make it harder to trace. Even though justice has subpoena power and things like that too, you really, when you're laundering money, you really do have the upper hand over regulators and investigators. It takes them a long way and a lot of time to unravel the onion of a good scheme. So you have the advantage, and time is your advantage. And if they're allowing you to do that, my question is why? Grab it while they can. Lock up the bank accounts. Grab the money before it's gone, like a magic act. Does that make any sense?
They have to stop the money laundering. They must seize it. Now, there has been criminal liens filed on all of this money in this estate of Jeffrey Epstein courtrooms in the Virgin Islands. And there's been a series of court orders issued against the lawyers and against the co-executive, Darren Indyke, who is a lawyer in New York, warning him not to dissipate this money. And they stopped him legally, not criminally. Legally, he's been stopped by court orders to not dissipate this money. And liens have been filed, as I just said. So Darren Indyke has a criminal investigation open against him in the Southern District of New York, has been claimed against by the Virgin Islands Attorney General for money laundering, and a criminal lien has been placed against this estate Darren Indyke created with Jeffrey Epstein 2 days before Jeffrey Epstein died. So this is all taking place this minute. The question that you repeat, Michael, is what the heck's the delay? Why since August 10th, 2019? I mean, this should have been done by now. So there's evidently a reason that I would like an answer to. Let Joe Biden tell us the answer. Call the Joe Biden campaign and say, why didn't this seizure take place for America's benefit? Joe Biden will get to it, that's for sure.
Well, there might be a reason. There might be a other friendly folks to the U.S. Intel that are implicated in some of that money. That's the kind of thing that crosses my brain. And you might have to walk on eggshells until you can figure out how to insulate those players, so to speak. Any thoughts on that?
What I've researched is that the Intel people cannot stop the seizure of this money laundered $1 billion for the victims. If that's what's taking place, that can't be allowed to continue, because that's totally a violation of the rule of law. It can be sorted out between whoever has legitimate claims on the money laundered billions, but it can't be stopped. And it's being claimed in litigation in the Virgin Islands. It belongs in the Southern District of New York. It belongs in America. I think they're playing in Washington at the highest levels with fire. on allowing this money laundering to continue. This is so transparent. It's crazy. Can't take place. Not in America.
Well, it's ironic in a sense, too, that, you know, I look at it as they're not very serious about it because of where the pressure was originated, in St. Thomas, right? And not in the Southern District. So, you know, when you deal with cases, and you've been part of cases, as you know, and you negotiate these things with justice, they'll tell you, well, we're not really serious about forfeiture in this case. Sure, we'll come up with something and you'll owe us X amount, but we're not really serious in pursuing it. So that'll, if you do a deal. Now, if you don't do a deal, we're going to take it all. But if you do a deal and we come up with something, you owe us $200 million or something, we won't press our case to collect it. And if you play your cards right, you can run out the clock and keep your money after 20 years or whatever. There, I think it's 20 years is there a life of a criminal lien. So a lot of that could be going on too. But the fact that it's not coming out of Southern District already tells me that there's something going on there. They're not really serious about it. I don't, that's just me. That's just conjecture.
Well, the question is a very critical question to America. I mean, this is a big money laundering case for a fortune. And it's got to be addressed. And I believe it's going to be addressed. I believe, Michael, if you stay on this and you do your research, I believe you can have a major impact on the seizure of this money laundered over $1 billion. I think you've got breaking news right here.
Well, I agree with you, and I appreciate you for dropping that on here too. I think that's I like to break news. that's what it's
but
all about.
This is very serious. I mean, they pursued Hunter Biden over monies aggressively. Here, there's no question that they're criminal monies. There's no question. But there's got to be a seizure of these criminal monies. The money laundered that was created in the Southern District of New York. It was created. The scheme was created in the federal prison in the Southern District of New York with residents of the Southern District of New York. So there's no question about venue and jurisdiction, because the investments were even managed by the lawyers in the Southern District of New York. Something needs.
Well, let me ask you. Let me ask you your opinion on why it hasn't been done. What could be at play, based on your experience and your knowledge? What could be at play? Why it's not being done? And does it relate to a double-sided question here? Two-tier question, does it relate to the removal of Berman? Would it have been more a chance, let me rephrase, would the chances of a seizure been better if Berman stayed in place as opposed to him being removed? And is that part of the reason he was removed? You know, you get my drift.
The second prong of your point of removing and firing the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York versus seizing the money laundered over $1 billion now is on the table. It's on the table. What you're fine-tuning, Michael, is to help focus the media as to Mr. Berman, his firing, and the seizure of the over $1 billion of criminal proceeds. They're all on the table, and they have to be done. It's a scandal, Michael, a very serious American scandal. got to be done.
Well, I think there's normally, when you work these cases, there's something. That $1 billion is now a bargaining chip. Somebody doesn't want something to come out about this case from the political side. And the fact that they haven't seized that is some type of a chip that's being used for somebody like Maxwell to keep their mouth shut, or her co-conspirators to keep their mouth shut, that would implicate important people, rich and famous, that kind of thing. That's the only thing I can think of. That's the only reason you would fire Berman and leave that on the table as almost like a peace offering. Don't rat me out, because I can take your money if you do. And if you decide to rat me out, it's going to be very expensive for you. Does that make any sense?
It's a valid question, that's for sure. But they can't help Ghislaine Maxwell illegitimately in front of the whole world's media. President Donald Trump gets on the news today, actually today, to double down and talk about wishing well to Ghislaine Maxwell. That's bizarre. Truly bizarre. What about the victims? What about the $1 billion being money laundered? What the heck is going on here? That's just my question.
Well, it's a good question.
I think the FBI's got the answer. And I think they want to seize the money. Because that's the FBI's rule of law. So I believe this money's going to be seized. This is too hot a breaking news. You can't neglect seizing money laundered criminal funds. But this giant amount of money in the Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell case, you can't neglect it. This is going to be done. It's going to be seized. Whatever you think is the bargaining or the art of the deal or whatever they're trying to do, they can't do it. They cannot do it. I'm saying this can become a big election question if Joe Biden jumps in the boat. Call his campaign. Ask him.
I'm thinking out loud. I think that something, there's some piece missing. There's some piece missing that only time will afford the answer to, like in many of these things. The fact that Berman was removed has been troubling to me. And I go against the media, Stephen. They said, oh, Berman was bad. He didn't want to indict Maxwell. And that's just not what we've heard from justice. Quite the opposite. Now they spin it that way. And I actually think and have been told that the indictment against Maxwell was light compared to what Berman wanted to do, that his deputy just kind of slapped it together and put it out there as part of, I guess, to maybe appease Berman and keep him quiet too. It's so many different levels of intrigue to this whole thing.
It needs to be covered by the media, and the public needs to get answers.
Let's take a step back. Something that we were going to cover that we didn't cover. I just apologize for jumping around here, but the reason Epstein was placed into Towers Financial, where you were, after he had been laundering money for this cabal in the Middle East and beyond, global cabal, is what? Why did they want to get him out of there if he was so good at laundering money and putting money together? Why did they want to get him out?
He was starting to blackmail them.
So he's playing a leverage game, or a reverse leverage game, or a double cross.
Yes. Yes, he was starting to double-cross his bosses. Correct.
He wants more of the skin for himself? He's not negotiating on behalf of his employer for them to get a bigger piece. He wants a bigger piece. Am I right?
Yeah, they told me that he wanted more money. Yes. Now, there is another eyewitness available to discuss this. Who is there?
Towers?
And he is. Yes. I'm in Europe. And he was above Jeffrey Epstein in this scheme. And his name is Julian Leese. And he lives in the UK. And he was an eyewitness to this. And he can enrich America by over $1 billion of criminal proceeds right now. Right now. So this is a fascinating breaking news question.
Why aren't the feds on this guy then, Stephen? I mean, I don't understand a lot of these things. They're baffling to me.
Well, the feds have their reasons for doing whatever they're doing. And we're not claiming anything against the feds. You and I are asking questions as interested persons and the media as to what can be done next in the Ghislaine Maxwell case and why it hasn't been done since August 10th, 2019. Why hasn't it been done? I mean, this is a year later. This money laundering is taking place for over a year. If this was another Wall Street case like Bernie Madoff or my case at Towers Financial that I was named in, they went for the money right away. This is the only case in American history with this vast amount of criminal proceeds where America has to be asked, why aren't you going for the money and the seizure? Why not? That's the breaking news. Why don't you put out a press release, Michael?
Well, we'll do the podcast tomorrow, and then I'll do a story on it. See, we get a 1-2 shot because we could do podcasts and then print. So it's good, obviously. We have that luxury, and I think that there's definitely some questions that need to be asked, and the government needs to be pressed on this. Where's the money? Because, like I said, they should have tapped this right, and they would tap it right away if they want it. I mean, you know that. What happened with you? Epstein was named.
They moved for the money right away. Like they do in every single other case. They move for the money right away. Now, this case is a year old, and they have not moved for the money.
That's disturbing.
They can't do that. That can't be done.
It makes me wonder if Berman wanted to do a seizure and then it got kicked from D.C. down to St. Thomas. That makes a lot of sense. Taken out of Berman's hands. There's something going on there. I don't know what it is. I have to figure it out. We'll figure it out.
You're going to figure it out, Michael, because I don't think you're going to leave this behind.
No, I mean, we're chipping away at it. We're a small group, and we keep chipping away at it with everything. Now we got to worry about coronavirus, too. That's more than a compelling story, but Epstein should have been indicted with you, and what, he got off? I don't understand. The guy has like a perpetual get out of jail free card. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? You were the fall guy for him. He should have been right there with you, and the feds got him out of trouble again, right? Is that accurate?
I couldn't get credit in my sentence for exposing Epstein, which the Washington Post published in their article, everything that I did to expose Epstein, which was very substantial, that never got in front of the judge. The Washington Post secured the grand jury minutes showing that I exposed Epstein and that I was treated incorrectly. Now, Epstein was named with me for a good while at time, and then his name was removed from the case, removed from a giant case. Have you ever seen that before, Michael?
I've seen it when the State Department intervenes on behalf of a would-be defendant and smooths it all over, and the guy walks out smelling like a rose, and everybody else ends up holding the bag for him. I've seen that.
But you didn't see his name listed as a co-defendant. He's in all the evidence. He got named in a lawsuit for misconduct, and his name was removed. The Washington Post shows his name was changed from Jeffrey Epstein to the name co-defendant. That's never happened before.
And then, but he wasn't charged anyway, right?
He was explained and exposed substantially in Towers Financial's criminal case. And then his name was changed from Jeffrey Epstein to co-conspirator without the name Jeffrey Epstein.
And you ended up doing what? How long of a stretch did you do?
I did 18 years because I couldn't get the evidence that the Washington Post secured in their story of the transcripts that I provided showing the criminal co-conspiratorial misconduct by Jeffrey Epstein in the Towers Financial case. That evidence. And well, I would have never done 18 years in prison. And if I went to trial, Jeffrey Epstein would have been convicted, and we would have never had the fiasco we're having today in money laundering in front of the world. I don't buy that this is going to be whitewashed. I don't buy it. This money laundering cannot be whitewashed.
Well, that's encouraging to a lot of people that are listening, I'm sure, that it's not going to be whitewashed. But they whitewashed your case, Stephen. They went to great extremes to protect Epstein, to keep him out of jail. And look what he did while he was out.
No. But my case did not have the coverage that Ghislaine Maxwell and the firing of Mr. Berman and the fight with the Attorney General of the United States resulted in. This case is too big to be whitewashed. Way too big. It was on President Trump's plate today, again.
Well, it's not going away. You're right about that. It's not going away. The question is, we said all the same things about the Epstein case, and the guy got suicided in prison. I guess he was suicided. I don't buy that he committed suicide. But that's just me. You know, looking at the evidence, every single thing that could possibly have gone wrong went wrong. I don't buy that. There's no coincidences at this level. And,
well,
you know, so I'm skeptical. That's just me, though. You sound more optimistic than I do. That's a good balance.
Well, I saw the firing of the Southern District of New York U.S. Attorney Berman, and I saw him fight for justice. That man fought for justice. And if he was allowed, which I don't believe he is allowed, to tell the inside story, America would learn the truth. But he's going to leak out.
He's not allowed to talk.
But it's going to leak out. There's money laundering for over $1 billion occurring today, this second, in the Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell crimes. She's sitting in prison. death, if she dies in prison, then we all know this case is a fake. Then there's no question this case is a fake.
Well, let me throw you a softball since I've been throwing you curveballs. You've been hitting them out of the park, by the way. But the softball is your thoughts on what happens to her. Does she make it out of there alive? Do they tuck her away? Or is there some other scenario if you think is more compelling that'll happen with Ghislaine?
She'll definitely get witness protection. And she'll definitely make it out alive. And she'll be very critical to America and justice in this country and to the election. See, if you pose this as an election question about the money laundering and the failing to seize this vast amount of billions, this is impossible. Can't be. Not in this country. Can't happen. Can't take place. I'm throwing the ball back to you, Michael, as a journalist, and saying, you've got the breaking news now on your plate this minute. And I'm willing to stay with you on this ongoing breaking news and give you my knowledge and evidence of what I know about from what I witnessed. And you can break this news across the country and overseas. You can do that. Big story, Michael.
Well, we'll keep working on it. I look forward to working on it with you on a continued basis. This is a good first at bat for sure. I mean, there's definitely breaking news. It'll be out tomorrow. And we don't hold back. We don't play games here and kick things around. I did enough of that back in my early journalism days. Things get kicked around forever and they get lost in translation by the time they're done with it. So this is a good first step, and we'll definitely keep the dialogue open. I think there's a lot more to explore, and the challenge is keeping it in small pieces because it's so vast for people to comprehend that I think that's the better way to do it. And we'll continue following up on this on the justice side as well, and I'm glad to see that our information, which has gone against the grain of the rest of the media, is dovetailing with the information you have. It makes me realize, and of course I know that our guys on the inside are some of the best, and it makes me happy as well because it makes a lot of sense now. You know what I mean?
Well, I think the other media outlets don't have the training that you have, Michael, in this breaking news of money laundering. This is a complicated point for the other media outlets to understand. What you've done, Michael, is broken it down simply to money laundering. I never explained it that way before today, that the huge amount of money held and created in the Southern District of New York, the billions, that's money laundering.
Yeah, it's
you
massive.
You raised that today, Michael Moore. I didn't raise it. You raised it.
Well, yeah. I appreciate it. I mean, I was at Citi for 10 years, working in New York and Chicago and L.A. and Delaware doing this. So it's just second nature to me. But how much money do you think he laundered before he came to Towers for this Middle East faction?
Billions of dollars.
Billions?
Billions.
Jesus.
Yes. Billions.
It's little wonder that he was untouchable when he's working for those people and with that much influence globally and moving that kind of money around.
Good answer.
I agree.
Well, you ought to fight it out. You ought to say to the politicians. Do you want the money laundering to continue, or do you want it to stop? It shouldn't be litigated in the Virgin Islands. It took place in New York City. So this is very serious. Very, very serious.
Let's take a step back. Money laundering. From the proceeds of what type of illicit activities? We talked about arms trading. What else? We talking about human trafficking?
Are we talking about human
trafficking?
Money. Human trafficking, looting money from Towers Financial, looting money from Leslie Wexner, looting money from other corporate transactions that Jeffrey Epstein was involved in, all criminal proceeds of the poisonous tree. All of it with heavy evidence, very heavy evidence of criminal proceeds. Very substantial. Got to be seized. There's got to be an answer. There's got to be an American remedy of taking back the criminal proceeds for the victims and for America. It has to take place. But now it's being exposed, and now this huge fight in firing the chief prosecutor at the Southern District of New York by the United States over this case. That's really serious for America. Very serious.
Well, let's do this. Let's continue. Let's agree to continue and work together and talk whenever we have something for each other. And I'll there's other stuff I want to explore, but I want to keep it in somewhat in regimented blocks so people can try to digest it as much as they can. And I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your expertise and your trials and tribulations and your inside contacts about both Epstein and Maxwell. It's always good to hear from somebody who has firsthand knowledge because there's so much garbage floating around about these guys that you can get lost in the nonsense. I think a lot of it is published for that exact purpose, to misguide you, misdirect you. So it's good to shoot the breeze and get intel from somebody who knows what they're talking about. And I appreciate you taking the time, man.
Thank you, Michael. Happy to help.
All right. We'll do it again. And,
Sure.
Good stuff. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Thank you, Stephen, for your... It's a hell of an interview. I don't have to tell you folks that. People who listen to interviews all over the place from different places, different podcasts. Very discerning news consumers out there are able to tell quality from everything else that's out there, and we appreciate another quality interview. Breaking news on top of that, we'll spin this stuff off, some of these things off into True Pundit, and we will revisit life of that guest soon enough. He has a wealth of information on different things, and I was lucky in the middle of this storm crisis to be able to get him on top of doing more pain and basically doing this podcast the last 2 days by candlelight. That includes the interviews. I don't know how we were able to get enough power to conduct an interview with him, but it worked out. And thank God, because I think that's an important interview. He has important things to say. A guy who did 18 years in federal prison because of the feds and Jeffrey Epstein. See how they do that? See how they do that? They sell you down the river if they have an asset in place who's valuable to them. And they don't care about trafficking children and things like that either. They pretend like they care, but they don't. Let's see what comes of it. He is optimistic that this will play out. I am not. I think these guys are nefarious and up to no good. He may think the same way, and he's just he's posturing, perhaps, because of his trials and tribulations with the government. That's understandable when you go up against the machine and you end up on the short end of the stick because they're protecting a guy like Epstein. But look at the lengths they've gone to protect these guys, Epstein and Maxwell. And like he said, the money's still in play. Why? It's insane. Follow the money. Did you ever hear that? That's one of my mantras for an investigation. We are following the money, and guess what? I'm not liking the answers that we're finding as we keep continue to peel back the onion. And we finally get some clarity on where Mr. Epstein was making his money. A financier! He was a financier. Really? Okay. What was Al Capone? A Wall Street broker? It's absolutely ridiculous, some of these things you read in the media. So that's why we're here, to try to break the mold and break things down for you in very digestible blocks, like I said when I was doing the interview. Digestible blocks that people can digest and use it as a building block to move on to the next thing that we reveal, delve into, discuss, analyze. So I'm under the gun here still because the generator is, speaking of power, if you find anything we've done powerful, hey, don't be afraid to kick in on patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. We appreciate the help, and it goes a long way. It allows us to do what we're doing. And as I said, maybe we can get a new generator. Or get this place wired up or something in case this happens again. Although it was an epic storm and there's a lot of people suffering, and we hope that those folks are able to navigate their situation without too much strife and personal loss of property and things like that. On top of everything else that's going on, it's kind of a kick in the teeth. So we are Americans. We deal with it. If you have an opportunity to pick somebody up, and you're in a place where you can pick somebody up and help somebody out, God bless you. And as I say to folks at the end of every show, on that note, take care and God bless. And money.
cash, guns, and money. Send lawyers, guns, and money.